Welcome to another episode of the LESG Radio. Today we're going to be discussing the topic promoting multilingual education, literacy for mutual understanding and peace, and this is to commemorate the International Literacy Day. I have two educators with me who will be doing justice to this topic. I have Mr. Gordon Henry, the thematic lead basic education at the Nigerian Economic Summit Group Education Policy Commission. I also have with me Mrs. Moladi Adeni, who is the thematic lead technical and vocational education and training at the NESG Education Policy Commission. You're welcome. Thank you for joining me today. I'll start with Mr. Gordon Henry. What is the relevance of multilingual education approaches in developing the Nigerian education sector?
Thank you, Tolu, and hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here today. So when we talk about multilingual education approaches, it's important to add that when it comes to language, especially when multilingual education, it's under the purview of the National Policy on Education, although some schools of thought say that it's not quite clear. Truly, it's not quite clear, but we'll come to that later in the course of the conversation. Sticking to the relevance of multilingual education approaches in developing the Nigerian educational sector, we understand that when a child or when people have knowledge of more than two language, it allows us to communicate with many people in both personal and professional context. So you begin to look at that ease of communication that, you know, it bestows on the speaker. You also talk about the fact that multilingual practices enhances intellectual flexibility and creativity. So we can say that there is a correlation between the level of multilingual practice in our education and the level of creativity that we find in the Nigerian education system. We also know that multilingualism is a form of human capital. So this is because the skills in multilingual education, you know, they are created at cost. So we also see that this language skills make one productive and a better citizen. In conclusion, we find that, you know, multilingualism provides an insight into the understanding of different cultures. And when you look at how Nigeria is shaped, you find out that multilingualism as a part of the Nigerian educational system would greatly improve how learners understand the different cultural contexts and connotations as well as experiences in the country.
Thank you, Mr. Godwin. You have really mentioned some crucial points as to the relevance and the importance of multilingual education. I'll quickly do a follow-up question before I go to Mrs. Moladi. Looking at the current educational curriculum in Nigeria, how can the Nigerian educational curriculum be designed to incorporate multilingual literacy effectively?
That's a very interesting question, Tolu. Earlier, I was talking about the National Policy on Education. So just off of the back that, you know, the policy was not quite clear on critical language that supports multilingual literacy. So what happened was that in 2022, the Federal Ministry of Education, through the Nigerian Education Research and Development Council, the NERDC, made the giant stride of approving the National Language Policy. So what that did was that it clearly stated language of instruction right in our educational system. But the problem again with that is that the policy states that, you know, there should be instruction should be in the mother tongue or in the language of the local community. You see, if you look at, examine the evolving nature of our society, you then begin to ask yourself, what comprises or what makes up the mother tongue or language of the local community? If you look at urban centers, how do you define, you know, the local language of instruction? And also, we are beginning to have a society where in most homes, the primary language of instruction is the English, communication is the English language. And if we follow what the policy states, you know, around L1, L2, which is mother tongue and other languages, and this is, you know, what supports multilingual literacy in Nigeria. So I think the first thing is really ascertaining, you know, what the focus of our multilingual literacy should be when it comes to the Nigerian education. Critically, SDG 4, the targets in SDG 4 has stated some of the things that we need to do. But then for me, thinking around how we can better incorporate multilingual literacy in Nigeria, we definitely need a more robust curriculum. We need to have the right professionals with the requisite skills at the seat and responsible for, you know, designing the curricula that we need to, you know, implement multilingual education. We don't need to keep having a policy where, you know, there are apparent loopholes or that is not really addressing present realities.
Thank you very much. Talking about what we need to do, Mrs. Molade Adeniyi, what are some practical approaches for incorporating multilingual literacy into basic and vocational education? And how can existing education policies be adapted to support multilingual literacy initiatives better?
Thank you, Tolu. I'm glad to be able to contribute to this very important conversation. I think, you know, just going back to the beginning, literacy is a fundamental human right for everyone. It's meant to, you know, open doors to greater freedoms, global citizenship, and so much more. You know, it's a foundation for people to acquire broader knowledge, skills, values, attitudes, behaviors, etc. And, you know, when we're talking about multilingualism, there are many people who speak in different languages, who have grown up in different languages. And, you know, when we don't embrace a multilingual approach to education, automatically we are locking people out of, you know, a path to learning and a path to growing. So again, when we begin to think about equity in education, it is extremely important that we are really thinking about what multilingual, you know, education or multilingual literacy looks like. Having kind of said that, what are some of the things we need to do today? I think that the first one is to identify and agree on learning needs. And Godwin started to speak on this. We need to establish what the learner's language and learning needs are and provide information to ensure their well-being needs are met. So it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all, is what this means. If we're thinking about what policies needs to be in place, what practical things we need to do, we need to start asking ourselves, what are the learners, what's the learner's language? Is there a way of, you know, translating curriculum into a language that is easily understood and digested? And that would, you know, move on to what kind of resources do we need? So identifying, adapting, and developing culturally appropriate resources. As we begin to do this, we cannot leave out the teachers, those who are supporting the learning. So there needs to be a level of training such that no learning is lost. So a teacher may not be able to, you know, deliver learning in different languages. So there's need to possibly train, recruit, and continue to coach and mentor. because what you don't want is to dampen down the quality of learning because you're thinking about doing it in a multicultural context. And I think that when we begin to do this, I would then go to how do we prepare for lessons? How do we make sure that this is delivered appropriately? The essence of multilingual education is not to only teach. I mean, like to say it's multi, is to be able to teach in multiple languages. But the overall aim at the end of the day is to ensure that, you know, students or learners are able to continue to learn effectively, and that they're able to understand the concepts regardless of their background, their language that they speak, or the language that they grow into. So I think that there's some practical things that need to happen, many of them driven by policy, as Godwin already started to share. But there needs to first of all be the will of the community, the will of the educational sector, for us to be able to embrace this. And maybe the last thing that I would say is, as we think about multilingual education and resources, etc., we also need to be culturally sensitive. There may be, because one of the benefits of multicultural education really is to help our mother language education thrive. You know, is to ensure that we're able to, you know, provide and you know, keep up our cultural values as well. So as we're doing that, we have to be sensitive of, you know, of any cultural sensitivities, and make sure that that is all embedded. So I'll stop there for now. I'm sure we'll further the conversation.
Thank you very much. You have made some very crucial points, talking about the need for the support systems, the role of the school administration, and the crucial role the society also plays. And just to further elaborate on that, I would like you to just be more specific on what support systems really are needed, considering the fact that, you know, students are with diverse linguistic backgrounds, like you touched on in your answer. How to enhance diplomatic aid for the vocational and training education? What support systems do students in vocational training really need to succeed in terms of multilingual literacy?
So thank you for that question, Tolu. And as we think about what support system specifically for vocational training, I think the first thing is, how do we ensure that instruction is delivered in a language that it is that they understand? So, you know, these days we talk about the use of technology, the use of AI, and the use of, you know, all of these technology approaches available to us. A lot of the curriculum and content that is out there is primarily in one language, mostly in English. And therefore, a support system is, how do we utilize technology such that these students and these learners who do not necessarily have English as a first language are able to get the level of the same level of instruction that, you know, that their peers who speak English can. And I think that, you know, there are many tools out there, many translation tools that will effectively do that. So, you know, historically, what you've had are people are learning by either watching. They do not necessarily understand the instruction, but they learn by doing, which is great. However, moving it a step further is, can I translate this instruction into a language that the learner learns? So imagine when, you know, you are at international conferences, for instance, and the speaker is speaking in one language, and me, the hearer of the audience, I can tune in my frequency on my device to be able to translate whatever the speaker is saying. And that's how we need to be thinking about what support system is required. I think another approach is around peer-to-peer. There are, even within the educational sector, where we can actually pair up students who are already multilingual to support those who may not necessarily be first language English speakers, as an example. And I think that having that kind of support from a peer mentor or a peer coach, if you like, also helps to make instruction easier. Secondly, the support system is what support do the teachers and the educators need to be able to deliver the curriculum in this manner. We need to be quite intentional about providing them with the support such that, like I mentioned earlier, we are not dampening down the content of the curriculum. We are sure that the translation, and we may need to, you know, get support from local translators, people that are living in the communities that truly understand, you know, the different languages. Everything we do, we need to make sure that the goal of why we're doing this is at our forefront and is at our focus, which is to be able to deliver high quality education to learners regardless of their language, and ensuring that everyone has access and there is equity in education. So I think that the support ranges from the support that the sheer will of the government to make this happen to be able to give us quality and inclusive learning, the learner themselves and what tools and resources are available to them to ensure that their learning isn't impacted, and also, you know, looking at the educators and those delivering the learning, what support is being provided to them to ensure that, you know, they are able to consistently provide a high quality of education.
Thank you very much. And touching on the will from the government to support multilingual literacy, Mr. Godwin, you have started touching on the policy aspects to aid multilingual literacy, and I just want you to just elaborate on that further, and in particular, how innovation in education technology can help to promote and improve multilingual learning outcomes for students and pupils.
Thank you, Tolu, and excellent contributions from Molade. So when we talk about innovation in education technology and how, you know, it can improve multilingual learning outcomes. Before I even begin to speak, you know, as I was thinking around this conversation, it came to, you know, my consciousness that as a society, especially in our education system, if we are not deliberate, right, in a few years, what would make up Nigeria's multilingual education would not be our indigenous languages. Because again, like I was trying to share earlier, we are having more people who don't understand our local dialect, and what they understand more is, you know, the English language, French, and other languages. So that would likely be what would make up our multilingual education system. So we need to be deliberate around investing and, you know, just ensuring that our local language does not die off, which is even part of why the national policy, language policy, was put in place. And, you know, linking this to how edtech and innovation can help, you know, improve multilingual approach. Molade had started speaking to this around how we can use technology to support the creation of materials. Again, this is something a very huge opportunity that we have. The other day, I was listening to someone, and the person was speaking French, right? It then happened that when I finished listening to the person and read the caption, it was on social media, I then found out that the speaker does not understand French. What he did was to speak in English, which is what the language he knows how to communicate in, and then the AI technology interpreted everything to French. It did not lose meaning, or there was no loss of translation. Everything was intact. This is something that we should begin to think around if we want to improve multilingual learning in the country. You know, just getting native speakers of the language to begin to speak. This, we have a recording, a repository of our native dialects. You know, we already have a shortage of qualified teachers who know how to teach a lot of language. And talking about multilingual education as well, it means that the teacher or the facilitator of the learning needs to, you know, have good command of at least two languages, right? And if you look at even today, another challenge that we have, same still with teachers, is that you have a system where core members are being used to teach in communities where they are not native. So again, there's that gap. This is where innovation and technology comes in. You don't need the teacher in person, right? You could have these recordings where speak at least in English. We know that the system would begin to interpret it. This opens up another layer, right? How do we then begin to train AI and other technology to begin to recognize our indigenous language? You can check today, if you try to use Google Translate to translate a native dialect to another dialect, it would definitely not give you an accurate answer. So this is an area we can begin to think of as we begin to think around innovation. First, we need to invest heavily in the infrastructure and the systems that would aid innovation in that light. That would, the world is becoming technologically driven, so we don't need to go any other route. It's to invest in the right technology that would, you know, help us achieve the kind of multilingual education system that we are looking at. And at the end of the day, it still leads back to policy. We need policies that support, you know, this. And it's also why I was talking around the language policy. It needs to be more robust. We need more critical thinking in the design process to some of these policies that would aid innovation within the system.
Thank you very much. Since you're back on policy, I would like to know, talking about existing policies that we have, like one of which you have alluded to is the policy on the language, what particular steps should be introduced by the government? What do you think, there's something to be changed in the policy or something to be added to the policy?
Thank you, Tolu. Really interesting question. So I think earlier I mentioned around how the policy could, you know, be well better articulated so that there are no gray areas, and this is referring to the national language policy, which is what, you know, would guide multilingual education in the country. I think for me it starts with in the design and the framing process, something that Molade had shared around involving local communities. We shouldn't be having policies, right, that do not involve local communities. And also, personal opinion here, just putting it out there, is that we don't need a one-size-fits-all policy for the entire country, because the needs differ according to the different states and according to the different region. So my suggestion would be beginning to consider, you know, just leaving it to the states to design a multilingual policy that reflects the realities of their state, as opposed to starting from the federal level and taking it to the state. That's my own thinking on how I feel this can better be approached. We can have a national vision, right, for what we want multilingual education to look like. However, the realities, similar to the realities of the Nigerian education system, differs according to the different states. This is where they should then come in to begin to look at how do we introduce policies that support, you know, the attainment of this vision in our state. So that would be my thought, not necessarily to discard the entire policy or reinvent the wheel, right? It's just rethinking the process that actually leads to the policy itself.
Thank you very much. And great points that you have mentioned around how to improve and rethink the policy design approach. And I would like to just go back to Mrs. Maladi, just to follow up on the question Mr. Godwin just answered, and looking more directly on how to even measure the impact of the policies. How can the impact of multilingual policies and programs be monitored and evaluated to ensure effectiveness?
Thank you so much, Tolu, for that question. And, you know, I think that monitoring and evaluation and measuring impact is extremely important. But I think that, you know, a lot of reasons why we don't effectively measure or are unable to measure is because we don't know what we are measuring. So I dare say that, you know, meaningful evaluation is best accomplished by planning ahead. So we don't, it's not really an extraordinary process. It, as we are starting out, it needs to be integrated in our program activities right from the start. So right from when we are, you know, co-creating these policies with all of the different stakeholders, at the point of design is when we are asking ourselves, how are we going to evaluate, you know, these policies? And I want to talk about an evaluation planning cycle. So one is, you know, assessing the needs. We've already assessed the needs. We need this. What are then the goals and the objectives? They need to be clear. You know, we talk about SMART goals and objectives. They need to be clear. They need to be measurable. They need to be realistic, and they need to be time bound. We need to know what we're looking for, by when, how many people would have gone through, how much of the curriculum would have been translated, as an example. How would they have been tested? How would we know what the outcome is? Are we able to compare those who are learning in a different language versus those who are learning in English per se? What are their outcomes at the end of the day? Do they have the same opportunities? Are they able to access the same opportunities? What is their economic, you know, output like? So those are it needs to be a thoughtful process in really thinking about how we are going to measure impact at the end of the day. You know, number goals are great. You know, we can measure the number of people that have now been able to access, you know, quality education through this policy. But beyond the numbers, what is the deeper impact that we want to see? We talk about things like income transformation. We talk about things like economic growth. We even talk about things like how are they contributing to the country's GDP. That is how thoughtful we need to be. And, you know, measuring impact is beyond just a one stop, right? Even after we've gotten this result, we need to be able to communicate it so that we can then further enhance the policy. Because it is through communicating and, you know, really digging deep through this impact that we can then apply the results to make improvements. And then we sort of start the cycle again. So for me, you know, when I think of evaluation and I think of impact, it really serves as a form of accountability to everyone involved, such that at the end of, you know, an evaluation cycle, we can come back to say, this is what we set out to do, and this is the result at the end of the day, and this is what we're going to do as a result. So impact measurement is not a one-stop. It's a continuous activity, but it needs to be thought about right from the very beginning to ensure that it is actually baked in into the program design.
Thank you very much. It's been an insightful conversation. At this point, I would just like to have your final thoughts and with emphasis on how multilingual education and how we have discussed can really help to promote mutual understanding and peace, considering the place Nigeria is currently at.
I think I would go first, and I think I'd shared in my opening around, you know, one of the benefits of multilingualism is that it provides insight into understanding of different cultures and experiences. And when we look at where we are as a country, right, it then gives us an opportunity to build national unity and cohesion, right? By the time we have more people who are at least knowledgeable in more than one of our language, you know, it makes it easier to interact. It makes it easier to build relationship. It improves trust, right, with one another, because we then begin to identify more with ourselves. So for me, multilingualism, right, it's a no-brainer. It's something that we should be more deliberate about as a country, especially when we look at infusing it actively into our educational system. But again, is to achieve this, there's real need for political will in backing up, you know, this action. It's not a one-off project. If we look at the evidence that has been shown, surely by the work of Professor Fafunwa, right, around, you know, mother tongue, which is, you know, the basis on which we are building our multilingual education approach. You see the opportunity it gives us in, you know, having better learning outcomes for learners, right? But also, you know, the ripple effect around, you know, national unity when we are able to, you know, speak in more than one language in the country, right? So generally, it's an area that we should, you know, continue to talk about and encourage more Nigerians to look into.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Molade. Your final thoughts?
I think just to Godwin's point as well, you know, when we talk about multilingualism, it is just that, it's multi. It's not about getting rid of English, but it's really focused on also preserving our local dialect and preserving our mother tongue, if you like. I believe that the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals is actually intricately linked to linguistic diversity and multilingualism. You know, it actually begins to bring people into the conversation, people who have been, you know, forgotten about, or people who have been locked out of, you know, the conversations just because of the fact that we are not educating or we're not thinking about literacy from a multilingual perspective. And I think that, you know, it underscores the importance of language choice for human dignity, peaceful coexistence, and sustainable development. Therefore, we need to be committed to these ideals. We need to be committed to, you know, promoting, incorporating, designing, developing education literacy in a way that it is open and accessible to all, regardless of what their, you know, first language is. Because it will build inclusivity, it brings about equity, and we talked about the numerous benefits to quality educational opportunities. And this is in both formal, informal, and non-formal education settings as well. And when you're able to do this, and when we talk about the inclusiveness of it, you know, human dignity is raised. People don't feel like they're locked out of certain opportunities because they don't understand a certain language. And it also then begins to increase and improve pride in our local languages as well. So I'm not saying don't teach in English. I'm not saying don't instruct in English. I'm just saying for us to be able to ensure inclusivity and equity, we need to also be able to diversify that and do it multilingually. And And yeah, I look forward to when we're truly embracing this, and therefore literacy is accessible to everyone anywhere, regardless of language, regardless of background, regardless of mother tongue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for joining the conversation today. So we say happy International Literacy Day once again. We'll see you on another episode of the NESG Radio. Thank you for joining us.